episode 94 of Fly Away, a weekly podcast from Outlander Travel about the thing we love most, travel. Each week, we'll talk about different adventures and vacation options out there, some local and some more exotic. Join us as we chat about our own travels and those of our clients. Hopefully, our talks will help you dream, plan, and get out there. My name is Elizabeth, and this week, I'm joined by fellow Outlander travel agents Lindsay and Sandy. One of the most exciting travel developments of the past year has been the U.S. reopening of travel to Cuba. And that's after 50 years. There's still certain restrictions and criteria you have to meet, but most people agree that this is an exciting time to go. Lindsay was recently able to cross this off her bucket list, and she's excited to share what she learned on her trip. So let's get started. So yeah, that's exciting, Cuba.
Oh, it was amazing.
So did you have to do any like really special prep for this? I mean, can you talk about if there's any visas required now or sort of what sort of documentation you had to have? Was it all just normal?
It was pretty normal. They did send us an email that you had to click and answer some questions and turn back in. But because it was a people-to-people that was guided, we were kind of okay. And you do that online, but then at the port, too, you get a paper copy, and there it's already checked for people-to-people, and it's also for guided and for self-guided people-to-people, which meant that you were covered if you went off on your own, like I chose to do a few things. But something, if you do go off on your own and under the people-to-people qualifications, you have to keep a journal for the U.S. government for 5 years. Now, that can be just a couple things, write down a couple things about what you did, explaining where you spent your time, and most people are covered kind of with that with your cell phone, so the pictures you're taking will have, you know, time and date stamp and all
that. Is that just
for
the time that you wandered off by yourself, or do you have to keep that for the whole trip?
That's if you are not with the tour.
Okay.
So when we were off on our own, part of that qualification of people-to-people experience, and they just want to make sure that you're actually there, people-to-people, having a cultural experience, not sitting on the beach, you know, drinking a mojito.
Yeah. I think that's a good distinction, because I think people don't really know that you can't just go lay on the beach if
right.
you're American.
So I was going to say, yeah. Can you talk about people-to-people? Because that actually, I don't think that means anything to anybody.
Yeah, so, like, talk a little bit about, I know there's 12 little categories you can fit in, and it can be educational or sports-related or art or something like that. But most people go people-to-people because it kind of is vague. And,
Yeah, it's vague. You're having, it's, and actually this is a great segue into Fathom's itinerary for this particular sailing. Their people-to-people program focuses on the cultural exchange between, so not only the benefit that I was getting from the people I was meeting while I was in Cuba, and the impact that their lives and their stories and the culture had on me, but also the impact of my American culture that I was bringing with me and sharing with them. That's kind of where that whole program is based on. You're not just there as a tourist to go sit at the all-inclusive, go sit at a resort. You're there to make connections with people and kind of foster these relationships between our countries. So it's a wonderful way to go, and it is not as scary as I think a lot of people are very intimidated by these restrictions, but they're really very vague, and it's not the Cuban government that wants this. That should be said. It's the U.S. government. So it's not like you're going to get to customs on your way back, and they're going to stop you and go, wait, let me see your journal. So it's kind of a record, and it's good for me. It was helpful. I didn't need to keep a journal, although I did, because it kind of helped me keep track of what I was feeling and what I was experiencing, because Cuba is such an amazing, it's such a magical place, and it was so wonderful, and it touched me in so many different ways that I wasn't expecting.
So yeah, this is what I'm interested to hear about, because my impression of Cuba is that it's kind of locked in this time capsule, you know, and you're going back in time.
It is. It's I guess without going into too much detail, it's kind of tragically beautiful. The architecture is amazing. The buildings, the history, the cars. And, you know, when I was thinking about this trip and I've thought about going to Cuba my whole life, and this has kind of really been at the top of my bucket list. So this was a huge thing for me personally to be able to go and experience. But all those years of thinking about Cuba, I had this romantic notion in my head of this place and how I thought it was going to affect me. And yes, the architecture was amazing, and it was incredible to be surrounded by so many classic cars and to be stepping back kind of in time. But what ended up stealing my heart was the people, the talent, the amount of, I mean, I think it's 75% of Cubans, and I'm probably wrong, and somebody can go ahead and write in and give me the actual statistic. 75% of Cubans all play instruments.
Right.
They have a 99.8% literacy rate, which is one of the highest in the world.
That's amazing.
The people were so amazing. They were wonderful storytellers, the music, the food, the art. The art was incredible. So I think I walked away with so much more than I was expecting. I knew it was going to be amazing. I just didn't know how deeply it was going to affect me.
Yeah, you look like you're affected.
Well, very, very much so. Yeah. And there's this feeling there that I can't really explain. It is a very magical place. And I know I'm probably overusing that word, but it's the only way to really describe it. Cause it's this untouched beauty, and the people were so warm and so welcoming, and it was an amazing.
So you felt like they were very happy that Americans were starting to come there, and cause other countries have been able to go there, you know, for this whole time. Mm-hmm. You know, we've just been kind of shut off.
I think it's kind of a mixed bag of emotions for everyone right now. I think one of our local tour guides, Fathom Partners, on the ground with the local tour operators called Havana Tour. And so each of the cities we visited, the three cities on this cruise, Havana, Cienfuegos, and Santiago de Cuba, they all had their own local guides. So each bus had a local person that lived in that area and took us around and showed us different historical monuments, and we had they were our guide for our cultural exchange experiences. They each had different stories to tell, so it was such a wonderful experience. And one of the ladies that we had in Cienfuegos, she said that when we asked her, are most Cubans happy? Are you happy that we're here? Mm-hmm. They said that we're not ready, but it's okay because we're going to be. We're going to get there. And it's just the infrastructure needs time to be built up. I mean, it's the impact that a massive amount of tourism is going to have on this area is going to be, it's going to be a huge change, but it's going to be also, it has the impact to, has the ability to impact so many lives in a positive way. They need the money that tourism will bring in. And, I think that's, you know, everyone's happy. Are they where they want to be? It's like having 50 people show up at your house and you got a 500 square foot house and they're all there at the same time.
But you didn't expect them. Yeah.
You didn't expect them that day. So, but, the overall vibe that I got was that they were very happy that we were there. If not a little bit concerned, you know, like most of us, one of my reasonings for going, I wanted to have pictures before Starbucks got there and, before McDonald's was on every corner. And
so with that in mind and knowing that it's still sort of a controlled tourism environment, did you feel like if someone were planning a trip to Cuba, how should they adjust their expectations compared to what they might be used to on an escorted tour? Because essentially when you were on land, that's what you were on, right? It's pretty much an escorted tour.
Yeah, it was a guided, we did, a guided walking tour in Havana and then also a guided bus tour. I think what one thing that's really important for people to understand, and this is kind of hard to understand until you can see it. You can read about it, you can hear about it, but until you're actually there, you don't understand the lack of resources that are available. One particular example, when we started off our walking tour in Havana, we had, our guide had a microphone and a little box, and everyone could hear him. Well, the microphone died and there was no replacement for it. And people started grumbling, "Oh, we can't hear you. Oh, you know," and one of impact guides from Fathom that was with us, was calmly explaining to everyone that was a gift from a tourist. They don't have those. There's nowhere for them to buy them. And there's nowhere for him to go buy a replacement for that microphone or to try and, so you kind of have to I don't want to say lower your expectations. You just have to change the way that you are looking at situations. Like when we went into one of the Paladars to eat, a Paladar is a locally owned, family home that's been turned into a restaurant. And so it directly benefits the family. And that's some of the most amazing food I've ever had in my whole life. We had one of the Paladars, but, it was in this old, beautiful old home, and it was old, enormous home, but we had to go up three flights of stairs. And I overheard one of the ladies complaining, "Well, they need to put in an elevator because they need to think about mobility." And, you know, and those can be issues for us because we have the privilege for those to be issues for us. Right now, they're just not there. And I think that's kind of the shift. You know, you're going to have to put the toilet paper in your purse or your bag when you go out, because you're probably not going to have it where you're going. You've got to be a little more travel savvy.
That's a really good tip there.
Yeah. Writing that one down.
Just to let you know, bring those wet wipes, bring the antibacterial, because it's not, you bring your lotion, all the things that we take for granted. That's a luxury item. That's not something that you're going to find just at every corner. And this wasn't really driven home for me until we went into one of the government stores and we saw, you know, this is the one brand of cleaner you get. This is the one type of tooth, you know, this is the one type of whatever. This is, it's a very, I think for a lot of people, a cultural awakening, maybe, or a social awakening as to how different things are for us. So I just think an adjustment of your expectations there would be good. The other big tip is to not be afraid to talk to people and maybe brush up on your Spanish before you go. You're not going to have Google. You're not going to be able to put your head down in your phone and look at your GPS to figure out where you need to go.
Pokemon Go?
No, there is no Pokemon Go. No, that's really the only place in the world. That's the biggest right there. If anybody's looking to get away from Pokemon Go, this is the one place that you can go where you'll be safe. But yeah, you know, you're not going to be able to. And I had one of those moments, and I was trying to think if I've ever, in all the years that I've traveled all over the world, all the places that I've been, I have never experienced this feeling that I had when we were doing our walking tour. I'd stopped to talk to a local street artist, and he was going to he was in school, and he wrote his name, and I actually friended him on Facebook, and he's just an amazing person and extremely talented. You can't step a foot and not run into someone who's just overly gifted in either the arts or the music department in Cuba. But so I kind of got separated from my group, and we had all of these buses down in Old Havana that dropped people off, and everyone's doing their walking tours. And all of the impact guides had blue shirts, and the Havana tour guides had blue shirts. So I look, and I think I see out of the corner of my eye, I think I see a blue shirt turning a corner. So I take off running, and I end up running like three or four blocks chasing this group before I catch up to it and realize it's not my group.
Oh God.
And then I look and I'm like, oh my God, I am lost in Cuba, in Havana.
That's like a book title, Lost in Havana.
Yeah, right?
with a cell phone that pretty much at this point might as well be a paperweight, because it's not, I have no map, I had no, so I ended up finding another, finding my way back, and here they had gone off into a printing area that was right around the corner, and I should have known better. We had a couple people who were a little mobility challenged in our group, so I should have known. Logically, there's no way they could have covered that much ground that fast. Mm. But I panicked. And had I not had that experience, I would have never had that feeling. And I just started kind of laughing, that inappropriate laughter at the moment of what
I'm gonna die.
It's so funny.
Like, what happened to Lindsay? Oh, well, you know.
Yeah.
She lives in Cuba now.
I don't think they allow that yet.
So did you have to change a bunch of money and like, you know, not really use credit cards? How does that work?
Yeah, there you can't use your credit cards. And you can't, there's no internet. There's no, cell phone use. So no credit cards. What we did, and one of the luxuries of going with Fathom and being on the beautiful Adonia, is, you have the infrastructure on the ship. You've got your running water and your clean, nice, luxury kind of accommodations on board. And, you know, you have the purser's desk where you can go get cash off of your account, and which is what I did. And then I went to the one of the money exchanges. There are 16 booths or something, 12 or 16 booths in Havana, so that's the best place to exchange money when I needed to exchange extra money. My tip, though, is to bring euros or Canadian money, because you are taxed. Actually, I brought euros, but there's an American currency tax if you're converting.
Interesting. Yeah. So was the ship able to give you euros?
No, the ship is not able to. I brought my own, and then when I ran out, I had to.
Okay. So the ship had U.S. dollars. And incidentally, that's kind of unusual that a ship has a lot of cash to do that with, because in a lot of cases, the ships cannot, you know, give you sort of a cash back. That's a normal cruise ship is not really equipped to do that. They just don't carry large amounts of cash.
Well, they also have the luxury of, there are only, I think their maximum capacity on the Adonia is like 704 people. And like 352 staterooms. So it's a very small, I mean, not so small that it's cramped, but it's a smaller ship. So you're not, the lines weren't incredibly long. I don't think I ever saw a line at the desk. So that's another caveat for something to be said. I'm really loving smaller ships now.
Mm-hmm.
We'll talk a little bit more about Fathom on our next episode as well. But, you sailed there, you cruised, but you can get there by plane now. I mean, there are ways to go and just fly in if you aren't a cruiser, if you don't like cruising, or if you don't want to do it that way. So do you have any thoughts on, I mean, do you have any regrets that you went via cruise ship?
Not at all. In fact, the exact opposite. I want to go back. And in fact, I have a group set up for spring to go back to Cuba and, with Fathom again. I think cruising right now is the way to go. And I think this cruise line in particular is the way to experience Cuba. They just don't have the infrastructure set up. I'd love to stay at the Nacional, hotel. I would love to maybe kind of do a couple other things down the road, land wise. But I think for right now, for where they are, I think that for me personally, I liked being able to come back to the ship and only unpack once and not have to worry about getting on and off buses and hauling all of my stuff. And how much does my baggage weigh? Do I have to pay a per pound fee for my baggage with a land tour? Do I have to do this? Do I have to worry about, and you have to remember too, there are no, like if you wanted to do, you know, it's fine and dandy to think about flying to Cuba. That's great. Where are you going to go when you get there? Because you can't just go to hotels.com.
Yeah, you need to be with an organized group. I mean, yes, we have several options that way. Yeah.
You have to go with an organized group. You have to, even making reservations for hotels there right now, everything is all very much old school paper and phone reservations. And you kind of, I think... you get more, personally, I think I got more for my dollar's worth out of doing it this way, if that makes any sense. It's mm-hmm. very, and I don't feel, I never felt rushed. I never felt, I mean, the one thing, and everybody said the same thing, it would have been so nice to have one more day in Havana.
Yeah.
But they're hampered by how many days they're allowed to be in port there. And they have a schedule that they have to adhere to that they was contracted with the Cuban government. So it's very much, but that's, yeah, I would go back again.
So if you were there for a week, did you spend like 2 days per port, or how did that work?
We sailed, and it's only about, well, it's, I think about 220 miles.
Yeah.
Havana, Cuba is 220 miles from Miami. So mm-hmm. it was about a half a day sailing, and we were into the first day we didn't, we're at sea, and then the, day 1 to 3, we kind of were in Havana, so we did an overnight, The next day we did an all day. It was about 8 hours of a tour. So that's something to keep in mind too, is the cultural, exchange, activities on land. You're looking at about, you know, no longer than 8 hours, so somewhere between 6 and 8 hours. You're covering a lot of ground. You're seeing a lot of things. I never felt really rushed, but it is just something to keep in mind. And there is an age limit on this, sailing. You have to be above 8, and that's one of the reasons why, because they felt that, an 8 hour tour was just too much for, younger children.
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, getting on and off the bus and going into the restaurants and, doing the cultural activities that they had set up for us, we got to see some of the most amazing, choral groups, choirs, and it just kind of depended on what bus you were on that morning, where you were going. Each one had a different cultural, exchange program set up. And the first day in Havana, I went to, see an artist, commune area. It was kind of wonderful. They had all this incredible artwork and, learned a little bit about the history of Santeria, and there was a dance demonstration that they did for us, and it was a wonderful thing.
Cool. So wait, I want to talk about something I know is near and dear to your heart, Lindsay, and that is shopping.
Yeah. What'd you buy?
I bought a lot of local art. Okay. I should have taken more money with me. I would have brought home just suitcases. I would have thrown my clothes out and just brought home suitcases and suitcases full of art. If you are an art lover and you want to get some amazing, meet the artist right there, one of a kind original artwork, you need to stop what you're doing and call me. Book a trip to Cuba. You have to go to Cuba. The art was insanely beautiful, and I wish I could have brought home so much more, but I didn't. I was good. I bought a few pieces and actually got to meet the artists, and that's a big thing for me. Every time I travel, I like to try and meet a local artist and make a connection and take home a little piece of a little great memento. So I bought some beautiful pictures and some watercolor pieces, and I did bring home some Cuban rum and some Cuban cigars, some Cohibas, and some Havana Club rum, and then some Santiago de Cuba rum. So anybody wants to come over.
I know, right?
So what are the limitations on that? Because I know people are curious, especially about Cuban cigars. The fact that is now even a possibility is very exciting for a lot of people.
Okay. So the U.S. government says, and Outlander Travel advocates, that you only bring one a combination of Cuban cigars and rum equal to $100 worth.
Okay, so and you can have $100 worth of cigars, $100 worth of rum, or some breakup in between.
Combination of
okay.
both. Now, remember that also you're still limited to 2 bottles. So when I say $100, you think, oh, $100 rum with a rum. No, you can't bring home 6 bottles of you know, $10 room. Mm-hmm. It's not, it's not, not gonna happen. So,
how much are Cuban cigars in Cuba? I mean, what are we talking about?
I saw everything from, two or three, so the currency is the convertible currency is kooks. And here's an important tip for anybody, thinking about going. They have two types of currency. The kook, C-U-C, which is convertible currency, and the coop, which is the local, it's the Cuban peso. Now, the Cuban peso is pretty much absolutely worthless once you are out of Cuba. If you want it for a souvenir, because it has Che on it, because it's, but it's faces. So coins and the paper money has faces on it. The kooks, the convertible currency that you can exchange when you leave, has monuments. So you want to remember monuments, not faces, unless it's a souvenir, which I did bring home some souvenirs, but yeah, you definitely want to pay attention to that. I'm sorry. You asked me a question. And I
how much the cigars were. It was relevant.
Oh yeah. It was about one.
And actually, that was a great tip. So thank you.
Yeah. I know. I'm loving all these tips. It's awesome.
One to two, I saw probably about three or four, but what I was buying were Cohibas. So I was paying, you know, $10, $15, $17, $25 a cigar, $30. I think the most I saw was three. You can't buy, I wanted to buy like a case, but it was like $400 and some odd.
Wow.
So you said that the U.S. government encourages you, but you didn't make it sound like that was a hard and fast law. Is $100?
No. That is the hard and fast.
Okay. Just making sure. To be clear.
I have accidentally maybe done differently on accident because I wasn't paying attention to my limits. But I was prepared to surrender and I put it all on my thing and I walked up to customs and the lady, I'm like, this is everything I have. And I was fully prepared for her to confiscate some stuff, but she didn't say anything. So, but you know, and they'll say that, you know, if you're like a dollar over, you know, they're not going to sit there and count pennies. One thing that's really, really important about the cigars, you will have people come up to you that want to sell you, oh, my brother works at the factory. Don't buy Cuban cigars on the street. If you are going to, if you're a U.S. citizen, if you're not from the U.S., fine, buy them wherever. But if you are a U.S. citizen and you want to have a hope of bringing that back into the country, you need to have a receipt for everything you purchase. So the only places to get receipts for that kind of thing are at the government stores, which does mean you're going to be paying government prices. However, it means that you are less likely to be parted from your treasures upon arrival.
Well, and it sounds like the government prices are not that unreasonable. I mean,
no, they're not bad.
Seems in line with what I would expect.
Yeah, it's not bad at all. And, you know, when you compare, you know, some of the Cohibas I brought back, I found here are worth over $100 each.
Wow.
I did not know that.
So has anyone that you know, have you given those as gifts? Has anyone smoked them?
I did, and my dad loved them. He said it was the most amazing.
Really?
And I'm allergic to smoke, so they're completely away. I'm allergic to smoke.
I'm going to leave the room while you smoke this. But
you
tell
know,
me what you
I
think.
Actually, I mean, there's not a thing about cigars that interests me, and I do have friends who are interested in it, so of course I would be generous, but I would probably have to buy them just for the sake of bringing them back.
Yeah,
just,
I know.
And the thing is, I'd be handing them to somebody else going, here, try this. No idea, right?
Yeah. The most amazing thing, I got off in Miami, and I went, I had another trip planned afterwards, so I had to go to Target and get some things. And my Uber driver kind of got lost and he was coming to get me. And, he showed up and he was from Cuba and he had left 5 years ago and he was telling me his story about his life. And I had Cuban cigars in my backpack and I asked him if he'd like a Cuban cigar. He started crying and I gave him a cigar and it cost me $9. You know, mm-hmm. I made somebody's day. He hadn't had one in years. And, but I gave some to my sister just had a baby. So her husband, I gave him a cigar and I gave my husband some to give to his friends. So yeah, they make great gifts. Everybody, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's definitely something people would appreciate.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, you know, it's Cuba. You gotta bring
it. And I stressed over the rum. I was so worried my rum was going to get taken because I had so many flights. I seriously did 4 flights after. And I was so worried that my rum was going to disappear. I wrote a note for TSA. Dear, TSA. I have a receipt for this. It's because you don't want to be bringing, I was coming back into the country from another country. Mm-hmm. And one of the big things you don't want to do is bring Cuban anything from another country that's not Cuba.
Yeah.
So I was concerned about that. And I had all my, yeah, my receipts.
Did you, when you unpacked, did you have any TSA security? You know how they drop a tag in your bag when they open it?
No, no, they didn't look through any of my stuff. And in fact, I had a luggage card shame when I talked back into Miami. I had, came home with one more suitcase that I'd left with. And I was fully inspecting this lady to go through all of my stuff. And no, nothing at customs, nothing at TSA. And
I can just see Heidi, our packing person, listening to this podcast, shaking her head.
Yeah, I posted that on Facebook, and I almost wanted to tag it and go, sorry, Heidi. Tag her. So sorry, Heidi. I really couldn't, but I had artwork to bring home. I couldn't.
Yeah. Yes.
I have one more question. Did you get to see Ernest Hemingway's house?
No, I did not. It is quite a bit away, ways away. We had a free evening, and we chose to go, this is kind of funny. So my roommate and I decided we were going to go off on our own and experience actual authentic Cuban culture. Cause you could have gone out to the, there were several guided opportunities to go out to the Tropicana, which had I had an actual time machine and been to go back in the heyday, be able to go back and see like Frank Sinatra, and I would have gone and done that. But I didn't have that, so I wanted to get more of the local now feel, and we found out where one of the surviving members of the Buena Vista Social Club was playing at a supper club in the upstairs of a Mexican restaurant, or it's a Mexican, like a Texas restaurant where they all had cowboy hats on. It was really weird. It was old white. It was great. It was wonderful. But so we'd gone to the Nacional. We took an old classic. We took almost every single mode of transportation, which I highly recommend doing. We took a classic car taxi to the Nacional, which was fantastic. It was convertible. And we bought our tickets there and toured around the hotel and went out in the back and saw the peacocks and kind of wonderful little time there. And then we took a Coco cab. We were trying to go to La Floridita, Ernest Hemingway's favorite bar, to go have his grapefruit daiquiris at. We wanted to go have a grapefruit daiquiri. Well, our Coco taxi driver must have thought we said Florida. So he took us and he dropped us off, and we couldn't figure out where, like, we are like 7 blocks away. He's like, oh yeah, it's just right there. And we ended up at the Florida Hotel, basically, where he dropped. So we're having a cocktail, and we end up with hors d'oeuvres for dinner, which is kind of hilarious. But it was this wonderful experience, and we met a couple people that we would have never met had that not happened. It was kind of a wonderful sidetrack thing. And then we took a pedal cab to the supper club where the show was, and it was dark and it was nighttime, and all of the doors were open because it was so hot. And so you could see all the housing. The rooms are straight through. So you go straight through one room to another room. So you can see straight through the house, and the doors are open, and, you know, living rooms with the whole family is out there. The kids are running around. I saw one little room. There was a motorcycle and chickens and a crib all in one area. And, it was just a wonderful experience to have, to see that true Havana. And boy, do I understand where the term hot Havana nights comes from, because that is some intense, take the most intense heat you've ever experienced and just magnify it by like 100. And that's kind of what it was like. But it was an incredible, our pedal taxi driver had, like 6 kids, and we tipped him. We must've tipped him really well, because he was waiting for us when we got done. He came back for us at the end of the night. The show ran late. And the show itself was really incredible. I mean, we were in a room with an audience of mostly South American tourists. So there were a lot of tourists there, but they were, when we scanned the room the first time, I didn't see any other Americans. And they were going around the room pointing at tables and asking people where they were from. And then they would make up a song or sing one of the favorite songs about the country, and they looked at us, and I was like, oh, oh my goodness, are they going to point at us? Hi! But they didn't say anything to us, and they went to this table in the center, and there was a gentleman there that was from, of all places, Wisconsin. I seriously can't make this up. Everywhere I've been in the world, I have ran into somebody else from Wisconsin.
Did they know on Wisconsin?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Well, they, from the U.S., from the States, from Wisconsin.
No, no, but did they play on
Wisconsin? No, they didn't play on Wisconsin. There was this, the whole crowd got quiet. The room got quiet. And we're like, it was, you could feel like, what is going to happen here? And he called him up on stage and, he said, we're friends now. And he hugged him. And it was just this, it was this really, I think, it was an amazing moment. And, you know, compared with the ride there and then the ride back and the complete different side of Cuba that you're going to see at night and when you go off on your own. So, I think I like the security of having, of being able to travel with Fathom and see Cuba and experience Cuba this way and have someone with me that speaks Spanish, because unfortunately when you're standing in the middle of a square and you realize that you've been separated from your group, you start reevaluating choices you made in life, like 7 years of French and,
nothing against the French that we learned, but yeah.
nothing, you know, but it offered that security of having that, but I still got to have these amazing experiences that I don't think, I know I wouldn't have had if I had just been at a resort or just been on the beach somewhere. So this trip was I don't want to say once in a lifetime, because for me, I'm going back. I fell in love with Cuba and I can't wait to go back again. And, one of my favorite things in, Santiago de Cuba, we went to see the castle, and in the castle, there's an old room with these amazing acoustics, and, there's a famous choir group, the Vocal Vidas, and they were singing. And they were practicing when we were there. We were very fortunate to be there during one of their practices. And you could just hear their voices, these beautiful voices just echoing out. And you're looking out over the water and you can see down by the beach and just all this untouched, unmarred beauty. And standing in this amazing historical place. And it was just such a wonderful experience, and yeah, I can't wait.
Awesome. Yeah. What travel is all about, isn't it? I mean,
exactly.
It really is.
Yeah.
At its core, it's not about having an elevator.
it's
not about having an elevator. And say, I had bad food and I had good food in Cuba. And I know you want to hear about this, so I have to tell you, the beer was probably one of the best beers I've ever had.
Oh,
there you go.
Some amazing beer in the mojitos. Oh, mojito to end all, obviously, to end all mojitos.
Yeah.
So I highly, if you're a foodie, if you love art, if you love music, the last day that we were there, our last stop was in Santiago de Cuba, and we only really had a half a day, and we went to the main square and went up to the hotel. There was a big hotel there. I'm sorry, I can't remember what the name was, but we went up to the very top. You can go to the rooftop bar, and if you buy a drink, you're allowed to be up there, or you can pay, what is it, 3 or 4 kooks to go up there, but you get this amazing view of the city.
So I can either pay for my view, or I can have a drink and get my view for free.
Pay for your drink.
The drink was cheaper than the...
Yeah, I'm not seeing there's a choice there, really.
So you're pretty much forced to drink at that point. But you have this this amazing view all around the city, and you could hear the music coming up from the street. And it was kind of, for me, it was this wonderful way to end my time in Cuba, sitting at the bar, drinking one of the best mojitos I've ever had, and listening to this music, and just, it just chills. It's an amazing experience.
All right. I can't wait to hear about
it. I wasn't convinced until you said booze, and then I was all
I'm like, the best year ever? Okay.
Yeah, no, it sounds fantastic. So, well, that is our show for this week. We welcome your comments and feedback on this episode, or any episode really. To leave comments, visit us at outlandertravel.com. Click on podcast at the top of the page and find the episode you want to comment on. Or you can like us on, you can lice us. Or you can like us on Facebook at facebook.com/outlanderpodcast, or just search for Fly Away. Finally, you can email us at info@outlandertravel.com. We would love to hear from you.
On behalf of Sandy, Lindsay, and myself, Elizabeth, thank you for joining us here at Outlander Travel, and we'll see you next week.
Gotta fly!